Hello and welcome to the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. My name is Sarah. I'm so pleased to have you with us today. I'm very pleased to introduce the CEO of Smart Europe, Dirk Adelman. Dirk, it's great to have you with us from Stuttgart this morning. Tell us a little bit about what Smart Europe is in case anyone has missed the memo.
Hi, Sarah, and thanks for having me today. Love your energy this early in the morning, I have to say. What is Smart Europe? So we are responsible with a small team for the brand in all European countries, and that is sales, marketing, after sales. We even have a small R&D team over here in Stuttgart. So we're basically catering for Smart in the European region. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And you're the CEO. Tell us a little bit about that role. How big is your team? How long have you been there? What's that like?
I mean, we started 2019 with three people. So CFO, CEO, and HR. And now we are 300, which is also the limit basically that we have set ourselves. So 200 in Stuttgart in the European headquarter and around 100 people in the markets. So we have a very, very lean setup in the markets, which means we also have a very centristic business model here. Mainly also on the common function areas like HR, IT, or FC. They are also centralized, most of them here in Stuttgart.
Very good. Okay, now I understand that in 2019, Smart did a full restart. Walk us through that a little bit, this turning point in the company's history.
Yeah, let's start with the product. We switched to full electric. So we were the very first OEM, so manufacturer, that switched to full electric with the entire portfolio. That was then still with the 4.2, 4.4. And in 2019, we also signed the joint venture contract. So previously, the last 25 years, Smart was a 100% daughter of Mercedes-Benz, mm-hmm. or Daimler, or Daimler Chrysler, or Daimler. Actually, I mean, this changed also a couple of times. But now, since 2019, we are a 50-50 joint venture between Geely, so our Chinese partner, shareholder, and Mercedes-Benz, our German / European shareholder. Product portfolio, we completely reinvented. So as you know, most likely we have now #1, #3, #5, in the B, C, and D segments, on the roads, which means we have, grown from the A segment, 4.2, 4.4 into much, much, bigger, vehicle classes, but also bigger segments in terms of volume. We have reinvented also the business model. So we are now in a direct sales model in all our 17 European markets, plus in China, which was also a huge step for us as a very small brand. We have set up a team completely. So all wholesale organizations have been reestablished. So we have founded in the first year 11 companies all over Europe. That was also a first time for me as well. And then we have reestablished the network presence. So we have cut around 30% of our network partners out there and outlets to cater for the new Smart business model. So it was a complete relaunch for Smart in 2019-20. And then we went live. First IAA was also the first one in Munich. In 2021, where we presented our #1 concept car to the public. So that was in a nutshell, the relaunch from 2019 to 21.
So I think it's fair to say you've been busy. I don't think it's overstating it. You've basically changed your entire approach to mobility. I'm curious what impact that had on the brand identity. How have you experienced that?
I mean, Smart also in the past was more a mobility service provider than a car manufacturer. So in the very early stages, we had auto train tickets basically for free when you buy a 4.2. We had 2 weeks of Sprinter free rental if you go for a 4.2. We had pick and delivery services for workshop appointments. We had all of that, but what we never had until 2019 was the full electric portfolio and also vehicles that are all the way up to family vehicles. So that changed for us. Smart was the inventor of shared mobility with Car2Go, Also, we're super proud of that one. Yeah. Also in London, we had a fleet. In Stuttgart, we had a fleet. I think the first real full electric fleet was in Amsterdam, if I'm not mistaken. So we were pioneers in a lot of mobility aspects. And if you transport that to today's portfolio or today's reality, we were one of the first introducing a digital key. So you don't need a physical key anymore. Your cell phone is sufficient for that. And you can share your digital key with up to 5 people. So within the family or within a small company, you will stop losing your keys. And if you lose a key that is approximately 300 to 400 euro, plus the hassle to get it from the workshop and reinstalled and everything. So we try to really think beyond the usage of the car, beyond ownership of the car, and try to maximize also the value for our customers of this vehicle. So with sharing, for example. Yeah.
So a lot of innovation there. When I think about how the cars themselves have changed visibly, I think from the early 2000s, they do look quite different. What parts of the DNA have remained?
Yeah, let me give one example. That we call the body space index. So the first 4.2 inside a nomenclature 4.50, so in the very early stages in 98-99, was famous for maximizing the interior space with a very compact exterior footprint. And this concept we also have implemented in hashtag 1, 2, and 3. So if you sit into a hashtag 5, which is our biggest car, you're gonna feel like it's, I would say GLE, even GLS size. So if you compare it to one of the mother chip products, so it is huge in the interior, still with compact exterior footprint. So that's one example. We always tried to listen to our customers when we invent things or when we improve our products. So we are one of the only ones that are bringing constant over-the-air updates every 3 to 4 months. But not only bug fixing, also customer requested features. You know that with the GSR2 regulation in Europe, you have a lot more bells and whistles in the car. The ADAS systems have to be more advanced. You get a lot more warning messages and beeps in your car. If you have a modern car, and our customers requested an easy way to mute this noise, so we
it wasn't me, Dirk. It wasn't me, but I support this request.
It's surprisingly a lot of customers have requested that, and I think with OTA 6, so our 6th update on the hashtag 1 that we launched 1.5 years after the introduction of the vehicle, we finally found a way with one push of a virtual button that you can freely program to basically make it your car. So compliant with all regulatory topics, we found a way to cater the biggest demand, I would say, from our customers, along with bug fixing and improvements in navigation software and what have you. But this is something we are quite proud of, that we are listening to our community, and we have a huge community in Europe, and we are trying to include those features or upgrades or updates that they want into the next over-the-air update.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I am definitely in favor of every single piece of modern technology beeping like 50% less, but that's a conversation for another day. We think about Smart as a brand. We think about this high product quality, the design leadership. Those are core promises. How do you keep that edge as more and more EV brands are entering the space?
I mean, for me, design is still one of the major purchase reasons. And we did car clinics in 19 and 20, where people chose the hashtag 1 over other cars because of the design.
It looks cool. Like, we all do want something that looks cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's not only exterior. I was surprised how much of a role the interior design plays when choosing a car. And our design for this generation and the next is secured by Mercedes-Benz. So our Mercedes-Benz colleagues are pitching for each and every vehicle. So they have design centers in Palo Alto, Shanghai, Sindelfingen and Nice in France. And they are pitching with different proposals, different vehicle types for the next design. And we have, for example, just decided on the newest addition to the portfolio, the hashtag 2, 2 months ago. Design freeze was a couple of weeks back. And the design is truly smart. So new smart family look alike. But also people from the former 4.2 times feel like this is a real smart two-seater that I know. And design at smart is one of the core elements that you not only have to compete with competition, you have to excel. You have to be significantly better because that's a differentiating factor next to safety and I would say practicability. If you allow two more minutes, I would like to go into what I say, what I think of as the decathlon in automotive industry. So in order to succeed, you need to be okay-ish in the 10 disciplines and you need to be excellent in 2-3 disciplines. And the classical disciplines, I would say, is European dominated like design, like haptics, quality, like driving dynamics and so on. There, we benefit a lot from our Mercedes side of the shareholders. When it comes to new technologies, to ADAS functionality, so autonomous driving features, when it comes to connectivity over the air upgradability, when it comes to development speed, here we benefit massively from the Geely side of the business. So in that decathlon, we are positioned nicely because of the best of both worlds, so to say, the best from the East and the West, which we can draw from. So that is a major strength at Smart.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to talk a little bit more about strategic partnerships, but first I want to take a quick second to just remind our viewers this is an interactive format. So if you have a question for Dirk, something you've always wondered about Smart, the future of Smart Europe, please post your question in the chat and I will put it to Dirk. But we will continue now with some of my questions. You know, you mentioned being the daughter of two parent companies. I'm curious how you balance that engineering muscle of a brand like Mercedes with the tech and the scale of Geely in your brand gene. How do you approach that?
In the beginning, it was a rather steep learning curve because it's not only tech and design versus speed. It's really two totally different cultural mindsets. From leading teams, from interacting, from communicating, really completely different world. And not only us here at Smart, we learned a lot, but also Mercedes learned a lot from the Geely side and the other way around. So Smart served kind of as a speedboat for our two mother companies. We are not the only project that they have at the moment on the road. But we are, I would say, the most prominent one. So when in the beginning I addressed something as what I would say feedback, it was seen as a criticism from the Chinese side, in Hangzhou. So you had to tune it down. You had to introduce your feedback slightly differently. You had to, also praise the colleagues for what they have done so far. And that is not in our German nature. So
sat through a German performance review is like, yep, it's different. It's real different. So you have cultural issues you worked through.
It's a bit more to the point, but it's also more in your face. And that we had to change gradually. But also what we saw is that the colleagues in China adjusted to the German approach. And by now, we are very efficient when it comes to giving feedback on the latest execution of an over-the-air update, for example, or an app upgrade, and then making it better in the next 3 months. So that is a huge development for us. What was most amazing for me was the speed. And I mean, many people have talked about China speed, And I don't know if it's China speed or if it's just the colleagues in China on our side. But what we have done in terms of shortening development cycles now with the third product and hashtag two being the fourth is unbelievable. Usually development cycle from design freeze to series production is much, much, much longer than what we have. We are targeting at the moment 13, 14 months development cycle after design freeze. And that is for me, unheard of. But we can do it, or the colleagues in China can do it. And with the help of Mercedes-Benz, so design from Mercedes, execution of engineering in China, production under the monitoring of our experts from quality on the Mercedes side. So it's really a joint venture as it should be. And it's for us, a classical win-win in smart.
It sounds like the product has ultimately benefited. I'm wondering if you could share another concrete example about how this setup has accelerated innovation besides just making everything faster.
We were in many markets in Europe also the first one to launch a direct sales model. And we have learned a lot, particularly on the process and systems side. Are we perfect? No. But we are getting better with basically every week. We have a good exchange with our colleagues at Mercedes who also go into that direction of implementing direct sales. They are, I would say, they have a tougher job because they have a lot of legacy systems that they have to change. But you can also learn, you can also learn a lot from a startup environment like Smart. So we had more or less a clean sheet and then went on and developed our stuff. So we thought differently than the classical colleagues in Mercedes or Geely would think. So this is another example. Besides the product, where both mother companies learned a lot from, I would say, our mistakes, our failures, or our sicknesses that we had in the beginning, and that is something. Looking back now, you can say yes, it made sense also for the mothers. When you are in this treadmill, then you just try to run faster and correct the mistakes. So, a lot of learnings on all sides, I have to say.
Okay, so there were some growing pains, but it sounds like ultimately it's been for the best. Dirk, we've got some viewer questions, so I'm going to read this to you. This is a question from Talia Deniozu. I hope I've said that right, Talia. She wants to know, do you differentiate between customer wishes from China or Europe? Are there different models according to these wishes? She's heard that there can be quite different expectations and needs.
Yep. I like to go back to the example of GSR 2.0, so the ADAS functionalities and regulatory requirements in Europe. You have similar requirements in China, but in China, customers are used to that and they want to hear the car. So they want to have feedback from the car's ADAS functions. So traffic sign recognition, speed limit warning, but also driver monitoring. And in Europe, particularly in Germany, when it comes to data protection, people have a totally different approach to those systems. They don't want to be lectured in the car. We all love teachers and policemen, but not in the passenger seat. So this is a huge, huge difference between China and Europe. And yes, this button exists in Europe, not in China. So this favorite button where you can mute all your systems. But also when it comes to hardware in the car, suspension system, for example, we have developed specific suspensions for Europe, which in China are much, much softer. But you also don't have that driving dynamics with electric vehicles in China. They are mostly in the traffic jam in the big cities. I mean, exaggerating now. But here you have windy roads. You want to be also sometimes sporty with your driving. And there you need a totally different suspension setup. So there are clear differentiators between China and Europe. You don't necessarily see that from the design because that's global. But you feel it when you drive the car or when you interact with the HMI with our head unit. Yeah? Then you feel the differences. Another example is in China, we are selling accessories for our in-car avatars. So you can buy yeah, we have a cheetah in the hashtag 3, we have a lion in the hashtag 5, and we started with a fox in the hashtag 1. So those are avatars that help you in the car. So they interact with you in the car. And in China, we are selling virtual accessories. So you can buy a hat or a scarf or...
And people buy that.
They buy that.
I love it. It's such a different market.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as soon as European customers demand that, we also think of introducing it here.
All right. Well, it's so fascinating to get a little peek behind the curtain. So thank you, Talia, for that excellent question. As you can imagine, we also have another question about the forthcoming hashtag 2. A lot of interest in this topic. So Dirk, maybe you can just share. This is from Mark Plumley. Thank you, Mark, for the question. He's asking, can you share any insight? What will make the hashtag 2 most desirable and differentiated for its clients and for the market?
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for the question as well. And that's a nice one to answer. If you're responsible. You. We have communicated the decision of the hashtag 2 on the IAA, so in September. And we will introduce the first series production end of next year. And mid-27, we're going to launch the car in the European markets. What you can expect from us is a reinterpretation of our classic brand icon, the 4.2. So it will be a two-seater. It will be very, very compact. So if you have the current 4.2 in mind, similar dimensions. From the design language, it will be closer to the hashtag 1 and 3. So it will be a clear indication that this is part of the new smart family. You will see a significantly higher driving range. The current 4.2 has a real driving range of around 120 in summer. So here we need more. You will see superb safety standards with Euro NCAP crash tests and everything. You will see interesting charging options in the hashtag 2, which we don't have currently in the 4.2. So it's not only a new generation, it's really a reinterpretation of a city two-seater concept that can also go beyond the city, because it's not a 45 or 90 kilometer per hour car. This is a real car. This is the only real car in that segment. And we also try to cater for those people that have it as a second car or third car in the household, which means we have to also hit a certain price point with that vehicle. And obviously, we also want to have a rather sporty execution of that vehicle on the top end, as people know from us. So electromobility is not sacrificed. Electromobility can be fun and should be fun. And this is what you can expect from the hashtag 2 in the future.
All right, lots to look forward to there. We've got another live question, Dirk. This one is from Torsten Lausch. He asks, how much influence does the European Smart Team with its research and development team have on the development of cars and software?
Excellent question. In the beginning, next to none. Well, that was 2019. And gradually, our team here has won the trust of the colleagues in the headquarters. Our team is not only consisting of smart engineers and testers, but also of Mercedes-Benz colleagues. That's the beauty of being a joint venture of two big mothers or parents. So we can draw from the resources and the expertise of Mercedes here in Europe as well. Our R&D team just came back from China for first testing of the hashtag 2. And their input has been documented, has been understood, and now is evaluated. But that's the way of things. So we not only feedback on European specifics, we also help avoiding mistakes in such a concept, because the colleagues have never done a two-seater. Smart in Europe has a huge experience of developing now three generations of two-seaters. We know how difficult it is, for example, on the driving dynamics, if you have such a short wheelbase. We understand the need for a very big door opening, but we also understand the need for a turning cycle. We understand why it makes sense to not have a front engine, so that you that you basically have nothing interfering with the steering. So those topics come from the European R&D team, and we constantly exchange with our colleagues. We constantly travel to China to test. We will also have tests over here in Europe with the Chinese team. So we did that with the #5 in North Sweden. We went to Iceland also with that vehicle. So it's actually quite nice. It's a dual home strategy. So we do have engineers and testing and a production facility basically in Europe as well as in China.
All right, great. Well, thank you, Torsten, for that question. A really good one there. Dirk, we've got another one. I think everyone's woken up now and they have questions for you. So this is from Renee Arbeithuber. She asks, which digital in-car services do you currently see as the strongest drivers for growth and differentiation for Smart? And then she says, what is asked from your customers in Europe? Thanks, Renee.
At the moment, sounds crazy, but we started with not being able to offer Apple CarPlay mirroring and Google Auto mirroring. So we didn't have that. So Android Auto. So we changed that with, I think, OTA 2 or 3. And that fixed a major concern with our customers. In parallel, we have worked on our in-car navigation system. Because let's be honest, the most important in-car feature when it comes to connectivity or helping features is the navigation. And with that also EV routing. So here we have learned a lot in the last couple of years and also improved a lot. My highlight though was the integration of AI with the #5. Into the vehicle. Unbelievable. We went 2 weeks road trip through Poland this summer, and my kids asked the vehicle all the questions that I couldn't answer. Example, what was the favorite quote of Hannibal Smith in the A-Team? So I love it when a plan comes together. I did not know, not in English, because we watched that in German. So it was unbelievable what the car can be for you now, not in the future, already now. What people love about the #5 is the second screen. So you can watch videos while driving. But if you as a driver look to that screen, it automatically goes blank. So really intelligent features that not only help the driver, but also support the passengers. Those are functions that come from China, I have to say, because they are in those functionalities maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years ahead of Europe. But we benefit from them because obviously in China, which is also a very big market for Smart, those features are requested. And then we in Europe can also take them over.
Yeah. Mm. Interesting. Dirk, I we could talk about this all day. I'm conscious that we're coming to the end of our time. We have to let you get back to work. So a final question from me. In your view, what role does the car play in urban mobility in the future?
Yeah, I think we were a couple of times ahead of our time with Car2Go, maybe with the first e-bikes from Smart, with having a very sleek city mobility vehicle. I think now the time is right. And if you ask me about what's the future of the vehicle in urban environment, for me, this is the ideal combination of public transportation, so trains and everything, plus car sharing, which we still look into. Plus your own individual private vehicle, which should ideally be electric. I mean, we installed photovoltaics on the roof a couple of years back. We have the wall box at home. So actually we drive more or less for free. And I know that it's not feasible for everybody. Not everybody has a home where he can install those things. But that is for me the future, that electromobility is the way forward. We have bridge technologies in between, like hybrids or plug-in hybrids. But the way forward is, in my opinion, electromobility in combination, multimodal with public transportation. And then I think, we can get our cities back. Yeah. And the smaller the car, that's why we bring the #2 back, the smaller the car, the better for also parking spaces in downtown.
Absolutely. Well, we are all looking forward to that hashtag too. Dirk, you get back to work making it. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for being our guest today on the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. Dirk Adelman, the CEO of Smart Europe. Thank you.
Thank you, Sava.
And thank you. Tune in again next time to meet more mobility pioneers who are shaping our future. For now, have a great rest of your week. See you soon.